she said, "You're matched." And I said, "What?" And she said, you know, and she was, you know, cheering us on just as much during this whole thing and felt awful for us. And I could tell her voice was crackly. And she said, "You know, you are matched. There's a beautiful baby boy. He's 6 pounds, 7 ounces. He was born yesterday and he is in Virginia waiting for you to come pick him up." Welcome to the Mama Shrink Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Cynthia Hauver, licensed psychologist, certified coach, and Gen X mama of 2 amazing boys. My belief, you can't be an awesome mama unless you're taking care of yourself first. And that's exactly why I created Mama Shrink. You'll get my 20 plus years of experience combined with some very real life struggles. And together, we'll unpack the mental health, the physical health, even spiritual health to get you loving your mama life again. Listen, these kids of ours, they're only young once, and it goes by so fast, and you're never, ever gonna get this time back. We must learn to enjoy this wild ride of parenting. So if you're up for it, mama, let's do this. Hey, mamas, before we jump into today's episode, I just want to remind you that although I am a licensed psychologist, I'm not serving here as your psychologist. This podcast is not a substitute for direct mental health care. If you're struggling with a mental health issue of any kind, please reach out to a licensed professional. You can also contact the National Suicide Crisis Line by calling or texting 988. There's no shame in having a mental health issue, and it should always be taken seriously. Hey, mamas. Thank you for tuning in on this special holiday version of Mama Shrink. I hope that wherever you are enjoying the holiday. An episode that I've kind of been wanting to share with people is how Mama Shrink got to become a mama. I'm asked this a lot. And if you've been over to my website, you'll see that, you know, my children are both biracial. And a lot of people, when they see my husband and I and having 2 biracial children, are curious about our journey to becoming parents. Some of it is private, and I will keep some of the details that I'm going to share today to myself, because, you know, that is our journey, some of it, well, all of it, really. But I want my kids to have their own stories as they grow up and their journey through this process. But I also realize for moms out there who, number one, are dealing with infertility, and, you know, the holidays are a very, very difficult time for women out there who are dealing with wanting so badly to become a mom and are struggling with that. And number two, you know, adoption is a whole other layer of becoming a mom that is different than what other people have gone through, you know, in terms of, you know, trying to get pregnant and being able to conceive. It's a different journey. And I think it's important for moms who have been on that journey and are now living the life of having children through adoption to share that. Because to me, adoption has always been hopeful. And I think once you head down the journey of adoption, you want to look at it as hopeful. You don't want to ever go into adoption as looking at it as a second choice, as less than. And never, you know, have I felt that way at all through the process. Actually, if I go back a little bit before going into the adoption process and filling out the mounds of paperwork that come with adoption and going through that journey, you know, if I sit back and think about that time, and I'm also doing this episode completely off the cuff. I don't have notes in front of me or anything because I really felt it was important to do this speaking through my heart. You know, my husband and I had you know, got to a point where we both were in agreement with having children and we were older. And I believe, you know, I was in my later 30s and he was in his early 40s. And I always assumed that, like, when we were ready to have kids, like, okay, that was the point in our life where we would just try and have children and children would come. And I had worked hard to get my doctoral degree and was very focused on my career path and really wasn't ready to have children until later in life. And I never guess I thought, like, oh, we might have a problem getting pregnant. And we did. And, you know, for those of you out there who have been on that journey, I'm sure you understand that every month that you don't get pregnant, it feels so sad and so discouraging. And I started to, after a year of not being able to conceive, to really think, wow, you know, I never thought that this was going to be an obstacle in my life. I always, you know, most people, especially, you know, when you're in your early 20s, you're trying not to get pregnant. And then all of a sudden, when you try to get pregnant and you can't, it's such a different circumstance. So after trying to conceive for a year, and because, you know, by that time I was probably going on 38, I believe at the time, you know, we didn't have a lot of time to play with. So we started seeing specialists and, you know, had to do multiple tests and found out that we weren't going to be able to conceive naturally. I mean, we could keep trying, but our chances of conceiving were very low. And so after seeing a bunch of different fertility doctors, going through tons of different tests, being told that our chances of conceiving, even with IVF, were about 30%. And I'm not one to gamble, you know, when I started looking at the cost of what it was going to cost to do IVF treatments, because where I live, they are not covered in vitro, IVF, none of it is covered in the state of Pennsylvania. So we would have had to pay out of pocket. It would have been probably, I think at the time, this is going back a ways, but I think we were quoted maybe $28,000 to $35,000, depending on if we wanted to do one round of it or three rounds of it. And our chances of getting pregnant were about 30%. And we really had to think on that. And there was a lot of other factors involved, such as, you know, having to inject hormones and running to doctor's appointments multiple times a day. And I started to do a lot of research on my own. And I started to get on websites where women were trying to conceive, doing multiple forms of, you know, different things medically to conceive. And I kept seeing these sites and, you know, these women that were reporting, you know, 10 rounds of IVF and artificial insemination and all of these things that they were reporting and how many eggs they had stored and were frozen and how many times it didn't work out for them. And I couldn't see myself in that. I would cry. I felt so sad, so not hopeful, didn't like the chances of what our odds were of getting pregnant, and just seeing the money and the time and the heartache that these women were pouring out into these multiple different websites I would go to. And I didn't know what to do, really. I was sure at that point that I felt very sad because I knew I wanted to be a mom. I knew that for sure. I knew in my being, for some reason, because if you had known me early in my life, you'd be like, what? I could never see this for her. But, you know, it just hit me after the age of 36, like I wanted to be a mom. Yeah, it was very, very clear. Something just hit me in my gut that said, you got to do this. So after looking at all of this, I thought, oh my God, there's got to be like a better way. Like I can't see myself going through this. and it failing and spending, you know, we didn't have that much money to spend on multiple times of trying to conceive and it not working. And I seen people going into debt and selling their houses and remortgaging. I mean, just tons of stuff. And it is very, very sad. And my heart goes out to so many people that want so desperately to be a mom and what lengths they will go to be able to do this. So I started, you know, my husband had mentioned, you know, that he always wanted to adopt. And he actually would have wanted to adopt instead of, you know, us even trying to have children naturally. And, you know, I was kind of like, oh, you know, I still want to be able to try. I don't want to do these other methods, but I still want to be able to try. And after we realized that was most likely not going to be an option for us, you know, he and I sat down and talked about, okay, well, let's think about adopting. And when I really started to look into it and I started to do the research, it's hard to explain, but it was almost like I remember reading a passage in a book and I opened the book and the first line said, "Congratulations, you are going to be a mom." I'm getting a little choked up talking about this. And everything changed in me, everything. It was like, oh my God, I'm going to be a mom. Because the book went on to say, you know, it may take a long time. It may be a hard journey. You may have ups and downs. You're going to have mounds of paperwork and things that you have to go through to become a mom. But the wonderful gift about adoption is that it will happen. You know, and I thought, wow, this is like, wow. And I just remember sitting there and tears pouring out of me thinking, okay, this is it. Like, this feels hopeful. This is my journey. I don't know why it's my journey, but it is. And I knew it in all of my heart and soul. And so we sat down and decided, okay, so we want to adopt. We knew that. And, you know, there's various methods for adopting. You can do, you know, through the foster care system, you can do domestic newborn, you can do international adoption. And so then your world, you know, kind of becomes absorbed in, okay, what's the path we're going to choose? And everybody has to be okay with their adoption path, you know? And so then, you know, it's really kind of frustrating for people who go down the journey of adoption. When, you know, you're kind of like in this place of, okay, we're not able to conceive. Some people decide to adopt even if they can conceive. But in our case, it was, okay, well, we're not able to do this. We want to adopt. And then you get these mixed messages and, you know, kind of back and forth on the internet through people of, well, you should adopt from foster care. You should adopt from this country. You should adopt from another country. And it's really insensitive because, you know, unless you've gone through adoption and that's your journey to becoming a mom, that's not anyone else's business, you know? And if you have been around anybody that's adopted, you don't know what it's like to find out that you're not going to be able to naturally conceive and that journey that they went down to get to the place of deciding to adopt. And to criticize people on what journey or path they take towards creating their family is really not okay. I'm just going to be blunt and say that because it really is a whole other hurdle. It's, you know, thinking, you know, if you've not been down that journey to talk about someone else's decision about how they decide to adopt is, to me, that's just really insensitive. So we tried to filter out everybody's opinions and we really sat down and we thought, what's best for us? What's going to work for us and to create our family? And being a psychologist, I knew what was entailed in going through the foster care system. And, you know, you have to have a big heart, you have to have a lot of patience, and you have to be willing for a lot of upheaval. And at that point in my life, you know, I was seeing a lot of clients one-on-one, I was doing a lot of work, and I just knew that I had my limits. And I knew that I was not able to parent going into it knowing if a child had special needs, if that child had been abused. I knew what that would look like for the most part because I work with those kids. And I knew me as a person, not as a psychologist, but as a mom and a person, that I couldn't do what I do all day for my job and come home and try and be a good mom to someone who had those needs. So my husband was actually a pretty strong advocate of wanting to go through the foster to adopt program. And I would not agree to that because I knew what my limits would be. And I knew, you know, the importance of that attachment bond in the first couple years of life, and not that that can't be changed and remedied, but I knew that for me, I did not have it in me to do that, not with being a full-time psychologist. And that does take a lot of work. And I am eternally grateful to every mom out there who decides to go down that path. But I knew for me, that was not going to be our journey. So then we looked into international adoption. And the reason for that was because we really wanted more of a timeline. And on international adoption, you have kind of a specific timeline. And given that I had my own business and that I was in private practice, we thought, okay, well, this makes sense because we're going to kind of know when we might get matched. And then we would have to fly to this other country and, you know, get matched with our child and then bring the child home. And we decided to put in for international adoption. We did classes and we were going to adopt from Ethiopia. And then all the rules and laws started changing a little bit and things weren't working out. And, you know, through this whole journey of adoption, one thing I learned, and I wish I knew even more, was listen to my gut, listen to my gut. And things just weren't working out. It just wasn't working out. It was a constant upheaval, you know, asking us questions that we didn't feel comfortable with, and a lot of unknowns about what might happen in certain countries and it being out of our control. So we started that process and we actually pulled out because it did not feel comfortable to us. So we were left with domestic newborn adoption. And if you, you know, Google domestic newborn adoption, there's a ton of agencies out there. And, you know, you have to feel what's right for you. You have to pick what feels right. You know, we were open to lots of different, you know, genders. We were open to all different races. We were open to lots of things. There were some things that we were not willing to do, again, because I was honest with myself. And I don't feel bad about that because I knew what I could handle as a mom, being a psychologist, and, you know, what it would be, the reality, because I have seen it daily, of coming home and what I would, you know, have to be able to give. So we decided on the adoption agency that we used and then began our journey of mounds of paperwork and filling out forms and questions. And in some ways, you know, I joke to people that I wish everyone that had to become a parent had to fill out the paperwork that we had to do for adoption. Because it really makes you think. I mean, it really does. You meet with so many social workers and they do home visits and they ask you questions about your parenting styles. And there was things that came up that my husband and I had to really talk about that I didn't know he felt a certain way about parenting and I felt this way about it. But by the time it was all done, it was like, wow, we're really got to be on the same page here. So that is a hard part. You know, you feel kind of like, wow, you know, I feel, it, you know, if you, it depends on how you go in looking at it. And I really had to take a step back and say, I have to look at this as an outside perspective and not get mad about it, you know, because you can go into it feeling really bitter, like, well, anyone can have a kid and I have to go through all of this paperwork and my house has to be inspected multiple times and I have to fill out all these questions. And of course you can go in it like that. Or you can go in it thinking, well, you know, this is someone that's making sure that their baby, that they are willing to give up to another family or mom or dad or moms or dads, you know, is going to a good place. And, you know, thinking of it from the birth parent perspective, knowing the peace of mind that that entails for them And also thinking of it from the agency perspective of, you know, they are, you know, matching and they are hiring people and they are running a business to make sure that a child is going into a good home. So I always had to go back to that. And, you know, people will sometimes get mad and, you know, say, well, you know, they're getting all this money for babies. And I mean, you hear so many things. It's amazing the things you hear. But, you know, you have to look at it like, okay, well, there's social workers to pay. There's, you know, costs and overhead and trying to make sure birth mothers are taken care of and all the other things that go on behind the scenes in adoption. And you just have to go into it more with an open heart and not get angry about it. So once all the paperwork and pictures, you know, for newborn adoption, I think they still do this. For domestic newborn, you have to have like a portfolio. If some places, our place did a video and they show it to the birth mothers and or the birth parents. And they get to pick, you know, what feels right for them to have their, you know, child go to this other home. And so we put all the stuff out there and then, you know, they call it, you know, kind of the waiting process. And depending on what agency you use, you know, there's some agencies that promise this many months and others that promise this many months, you know, depending, some will allow you to pick gender and all this other stuff. So our agency, you know, we were open to either gender. When we first adopted, we were open to twins and, you know, certain things we were, you know, race and, you know, there were some things that I knew about mental health wise, you know, that if they were taking certain medications, we weren't okay with or drugs. So, you know, you have to kind of put in all that stuff. And then the birth mother, if you meet the criteria, you're shown, the birth mother is shown your profile and she picks. So when we put in for adopting the first time, you know, the timeline is murky now to me. All I know is that I became a mom before I was 40 years old. Thomas came to us on January 5th, and it was, you know, he was born on January 3rd, and it was, my birthday is in February, and I said, I want to be a mom. I kept putting out into the universe, I want to be a mom before I turn 40. I want to have a baby on my 40th birthday. And I did. So to me, that was a miracle because that was my birthday wish. And I remember, you know, my friend had sent me a onesie that said, you know, best gift ever. And it was my Facebook page for the longest time because it was my best gift ever. But to get to that gift was awful. I'm trying to figure out the right words to say, but it was hard. So when we first put in, we did get matched and the woman that was carrying the baby at the time. So sometimes you get an emergency placement and you have to be ready to go and get there and everything just happens. Sometimes you can get matched and someone is pregnant and you go and meet with the birth mother and you get introduced and you have multiple visits if they're comfortable with that and they want that. So in our case, when we first put in for our adoption, we were matched and she was pregnant and it was just, I'm not even going to get into the details for protection of, you know, later things with my children or other people, but it was really a nightmare. We had gone down, we had invested a lot of our time and money and time and money aside, our hearts, and had gone down to Virginia a few times and things were not lining up. And, you know, this is when I said, when you go through the adoption journey, listen to your gut, because there are so many things that were happening during the process that weren't making sense. And because, and it's sad because when you're in that process, you want so much to be a mom, you're willing to overlook things that maybe you shouldn't. And when I look back, there were so many things that did not make sense you know, between what the birth mother was saying, how many weeks pregnant she was, to things that were being told to me at doctor's visits that I was at with her, to shady things she was asking us to give her, to, you know, when the baby was born and we went down there and were trying to bond with this baby that we thought was going to be our son, and finding out, you know, these different men are coming in and out of the NICU and we're not really getting information and nothing's adding up. And it was during the holidays. So it was around, it was my husband's birthday actually on December 22nd. And we had driven down to Virginia because she had given birth. And of course we were going to be there. And then all of these things were happening that weren't making sense. And we were at the hospital day and night. We stayed there over Christmas. We had someone coming to watch our dog. And it was just a mess. And I look back and I'm like, there were so many signs saying this wasn't okay. But again, when you're in it and you just want to be a mom, you overlook things. You just think, okay, well, this is the process. And if you've never been through it, how would you know different? So it was a big debacle. And to make a long story short, you know, went on for a week. And we were down there and we were bonding with this baby. And then the day after Christmas, when we were finally able to get a hold of someone and things were opening up, agencies were opening up for a brief time between Christmas and New Year's, we finally got a hold of our adoption caseworker, and we got a hold of the agency and told them what was going on. They said, you know, we're going to look into it. In the meantime, you know, it was the day after Christmas, and we decided, okay, while we're waiting for everyone to figure out what is happening here, we're going to still try and remain positive. So we got ready, and as we did every morning, we drove down to the hospital to see what was, you know, supposed to be at that time our child. And we got to the doors that we normally come in, and we were told we were not allowed to come in. And it was crushing. We had no idea what was going on. We were on the phone. We were trying to call people. The social workers told us they were trying to sort things out to go back to the apartment that we were renting. They would call us. And I remember leaving the hospital, and I was crying, and I said to my husband, you know, she changed her mind. She changed her mind. Like, all these people that have been coming in and out, like, she scammed us. Like, this whole thing has just been a scam. And, you know, my husband's a pretty optimistic person, and he kept saying, no, you know, why would she do that? Like, we knew that if she did revoke her rights, this baby was going to go into foster care, because she had many other children that were in foster care, and she was not allowed to parent. And, you know, we had learned from being with her, the birth mother, a lot at the hospital, that she had adopted out many children, which was another red flag for me. You know, it was almost like she, I think, had said up to 9 or 10 times had had a child and then went through the adoption process. And, you know, my whole mind was floored by that. But all during it, I just kept thinking, like, okay, we just have to get through this. We just have to get away from this woman and bring this baby home and regroup, and everything's going to be okay. But that day leaving the hospital, I knew for sure that it was not okay. So we had gone back to the apartment to wait for phone calls to start coming through. And, you know, we got a call from the social worker, and she indeed told us that the birth mother had revoked the adoption. In Virginia, you know, you have, that's where, you know, the baby was from. You have 14 days to change your mind. And I think it was at, it's from the time, you know, the baby was born. So she still had time to revoke her rights. So she actually did sign the baby over, but then went back and revoked them. And it was just done, just like that. And over, you know, and we were devastated. It was awful. We couldn't say goodbye. We had no, it was just done. We had to pick up our stuff and go back home. And, you know, to look back at the grief and that and the loss was horrendous. There wasn't a lot of words. I don't think people in our lives, our families, our friends knew what to say. They had known that we had been going down to Virginia for months and months since we were matched in October, and how much we invested in this. You know, I think everyone was just in shock and it was horrifying. And, you know, I think people, you know, that have not gone through the adoption journey, they don't realize that when you do domestic newborn adoption, every state has different laws. So people can change their mind. So in Pennsylvania, you, where I live, it's 30 days, at least it was, to change. The birth mother has to change her mind. And you could bring that baby home, you know, and be bonding with that baby. And on day 29, the birth mother has a right to revoke her rights and you have to bring that baby back. So it's a really big risk. It's an emotional roller coaster. And, you know, in the state of Virginia, it was 14 days at the time. New Jersey, it was 2 days. However, I'll get into, there's a discrepancy in New Jersey about birth fathers actually having a lot of rights that we weren't aware of. But the whole process, you know, is just such a journey. And, you know, I really had to grieve. For me, it was like, you know, the same as grieving a miscarriage. And I went home when we finally made that long, long journey home back to Pennsylvania from Virginia, packed up all our stuff. I couldn't talk to anybody. I couldn't get out of bed. It was bad. And I needed that. You know, I needed to grieve the loss of that baby, because as I kept grieving, I just kept believing, you know, that that wasn't meant to be our baby. You know, I had to go through a lot of anger at the birth mother, and I was a little out of my mind for a couple days at my anger level. But all, you know, looking back, normal things that have to happen when you, you know, for us, it was losing a child. So, you know, there's a good ending to the story. But after grieving and, you know, really just being home and not moving from my bed for literally probably almost a week, I, you know, and I'm running a private practice at this time, and now I have to go back and explain to my clients that, yes, I took time off. No, we didn't get a baby. If you want to come back, yes, I'm back at work. After, you know, about a week, I really wanted to get back to work. I needed to get back to work. I had to reassure my clients, like, yes, I'm okay. You know, I have to move forward. And during this process, you know, after New Year's, our adoption social worker had called us and she said, you know, given what you just went through, you know, I need to know, like, if you want to hold off or do you want to put your name, you know, they call it being back in the books. So being back to be shown to potential birth mothers. And, you know, my first inclination was no. I don't know if I can do this. I don't even know if I want to adopt anymore. I don't know if, like, maybe being a mom isn't in my cards. I did not know. But my husband and I talked it over. You know, we tried to get back to where we were before all of this had happened. And there was something really powerful that happened, you know, on January 2nd. It's kind of interesting, but, you know, I just felt this, like, okay, it's time to let go. It's time to let go. And I'm not going to let this one birth mother who had so many issues and do something so horrible to us take this dream from me of being a mom. And I believed, you know, something in me kept saying, no, my, you know, my baby's out there, my baby's out there. And I know that. I don't know why I know that, but I do. And there was such a strong sense in me, probably during the whole time, of feeling like I protected myself on some level, bonding with that child, because it never really felt like, you know, he was ours. It could have been what I was feeling intuitively. It could have been the fact that the birth mother was always at the hospital with us. But, you know, it wasn't, you know, it could be me not allowing myself, but nothing, you know, something just didn't feel right. And so on January 2nd, you know, we sat down, we told our social worker, yes, we will put our names back in the book, but please do not call us if there's any special circumstances or if we don't match 100% with, you know, what our profile says, like we're just not in a position to go there. You know, that's all we're willing to accept. So I went back to work on January 3rd. Got through a full day of clients. I was starting, you know, to really feel better, you know, being like, okay, you know, I don't know how long the wait's going to be. Could be a year, could be, you know, I don't know. You know, I had no idea what to expect. And at that time, I was just really trying to be like, okay, I'm going to try not to think about it so much. And then the next day, you know, now keep in mind, I had just been gone for weeks and all this upheaval and a failed adoption and this crazy thing. And, you know, I'm sure on some level, my clients were like, oh my, I hope she's okay. Get myself back to work. And on January 4th, I am back at my office and I was in with a client. And when I was finishing with my client, I had all these missed calls for my social worker. And the woman that has an office across the hall had run over and she's like, your husband's trying to get a hold of you. And I was like, oh my God, like what is going on? So my first thought was like, ugh, did this crazy woman like change her mind? And I had already decided that that wasn't going to happen. Like there was too many signs. Even at that point, if she had changed her mind, I was not willing to adopt that child. I felt like it wasn't right. You know, it was something I had to come to peace with on my own. So I had no idea what to expect. So I had a client in the waiting room waiting for me. And I'm like, I'm really sorry. I have to make this call. So I went back to my office. I called my social worker and she said, you're matched. And I said, what? And she said, you know, and she was, you know, cheering us on just as much during this whole thing and felt awful for us. And I could tell her voice was crackly. And she said, you know, you are matched. There's a beautiful baby boy. He's 6 pounds, 7 ounces. He was born yesterday and he is in Virginia waiting for you to come pick him up. And I was like, what? Like, what? I didn't even have words. And I was like, are you sure? And, you know, of course, my first words were like, how do we know she's not going to change her mind? And she said, you know, we really, really screened and she really wants you. She adamantly, you know, picked you guys. She is kind of aware of what you just went through. So, you know, I really think this is what's supposed to happen. We promise you, we're going to have a social worker there waiting for you. We've worked with this hospital before. You know, we know the ins and outs. It's not going to be like last time. And, you know, all I could go with was faith, you know, I, you know, just started bawling and I said, okay. And the weird thing was, is the hospital that Thomas came from was 20 minutes from where we had just been. And, you know, I'm a very spiritual person and there was weird things going off. Like when we had been going down to Virginia that like the GPS kept sending us off course and taking us in the wrong direction and, you know, things that don't normally happen. And I look back and think, huh, well, maybe that wasn't our course. So, you know, my husband and I, like I called him and he was like, oh my God, like, I can't believe this is happening so quick. Like, this is crazy. We just got over this other horrible feeling. So I had to tell my clients, I have to leave again. This time there's supposed to be a baby. And thank God, you know, for having really amazing clients that, you know, also went with me on this journey and were so supportive and understanding of like, yes, I'm coming back. No, I'm not. Yes, I am. So, you know, got that all situated, got home, you know, and literally we had thrown our stuff from what had happened in the back of the basement. So I went down in the basement, got all our stuff, you know, called people again to watch Sophie for us. And, you know, we, you know, my husband was like, well, maybe, you know, we should wait and just go, you know, in the morning and get some sleep. And I'm like, there is no way I'm going to sleep. Like, you know, he's already born. I need to get there. So we got ourselves ready. We packed up and we drove all night down to Virginia. And when we got there, it was such a different experience. You know, a social worker was waiting for us. And, you know, I can't explain the excitement, the nervousness, all of it. But she brought us up to a room and it was so different. Like, you know, my husband and I were brought into another room and they, you know, treated us like we were the parents, which was such a difference, and said, okay, you know, we're going to go get your baby. And I was crying and I was so excited. And they wheeled this perfect little guy into the room. And I knew something in my soul. The moment I looked into his eyes, I was like, you're my baby. You're my baby. And that's how Thomas Henry Hoffer came into the world. And it was a miracle. It was truly, truly a miracle. And his birth mother was lovely. And her and I got Thomas ready together for, you know, and she handed him over to me. And we took this little guy with us from the hospital and we got in the car and we're like, oh my God, we're parents. We're parents. We, you know, and all this preparation, you know, was like, now what do we do? But it was such a happy thing. And when you have to, when you go through adoption, they have interstate compact rules where you're not allowed to go home for a certain period of time before you're cleared. So we decided since we had to wait, we were going to, you know, he was born by Newport News, Virginia, and it was kind of in this mall area. And I'm like, look, if we have to stay in the state of Virginia, let's just go to Virginia Beach and like camp out, get a hotel on the beach. We found out it was the same exact cost as where we were staying. So we packed little Thomas in the car, all of our stuff, and we drove to Virginia Beach and we stayed there for 10 days and bonded with our son. And it was magical. And we were actually cleared to go home a little earlier, but I refused to leave the state of Virginia again until the 14-day time period from when he was born had lapsed to absolutely make sure that he was ours. And so when that time period was up, that was, you know, I had already, you know, told the hotel, like, we are staying until this date. I refuse to go home again and drive over the Chesapeake Bay Bridge without a baby. And we did, you know, we popped open a bottle of champagne at 5 o'clock on the day that was the last day she could, you know, the exact time she could change her mind. And we didn't get that call. And that was that. He was ours. So, you know, the next day we packed up and we drove home across the Chesapeake Bay Bridge with little Thomas. And he was a perfect little guy and so sensitive. And I can honestly say that, like, you know, him and I are so alike in our souls, even though I did not give birth to him and we don't share genetics. You know, it's kind of uncanny how much he and I are alike. And, you know, it's just a miracle. And so, you know, then we decided, and I'm going to try and make this short because I don't want to drag on and on forever. But then we decided we were going to do another adoption. And, you know, we, not right away, we waited until Thomas was 13 months old. And, well, he was, when we put him for the adoption, he was about, he was about 16 months old when we decided. Because we said, you know, number one, we wanted, if we were going to do it, for them to be close in age. Number two, We really felt strongly about Thomas having another sibling that was biracial, because we didn't want him to feel like the only one in our family that had different color skin. And I had read a lot and I knew that that was going to be an important issue for them at some point growing up. And so when we did our second adoption, you know, we put in for, you know, just biracial, African-American, and, you know, all of our other paperwork. And in the meantime, you know, I had gone to, right after Thomas was born, because again, I'm a spiritual being, I had, you know, did a reading with a psychic. And she had said to me, she was kind of reading Thomas's birth chart to me and telling me, you know, things about him and, man, spot on as he's gotten older. But she had said, you know, I just see that, you know, another baby is coming. And for some reason, you're going to be buying a house at the same time. And I said, well, that's crazy. Like, you know, we're thinking about adopting at some point again, but who would buy a house at the same time that they're about to like go through an adoption process? Like, that's insane. Well, I didn't think much about it. And, you know, a year or so had passed and we had not planned on buying another house. But then this house came for sale that was on a lake, and my husband and I always wanted to live on the water. So we put in for this house and went back and forth without selling our old house. And gosh, that was a mess. But our offer was accepted. And so we had another home. And we still had to sell our first home. And we had put in, before we had put in for, you know, purchasing the house, we had already filled out all the paperwork for adopting again. And then we got notified in October that, you know, yep, you know, everything's in the books, you're good to go, you know, now you're just waiting. And so, you know, going through the second time was so different than the first time because I, you know, I had a baby and I felt like, okay, I can wait on this one. Like, you know, we have, you know, I'm finally a mom. And as the waiting process goes, like, I don't have to be so stressed. And I, you know, I feel so good about being a mom to Thomas. And it was just so, so different feeling of going through the waiting the second time. However, I was very adamant that I would not accept anything that could possibly fail. You know, and yes, there's the risk that someone can always change their mind depending on one's state. But if there was any special circumstances, I had said, no, I'm not doing that. So when December came about and, you know, Thomas's birthday's in January, we were planning for Christmas and it was Thomas's second Christmas and we were planning his little birthday party and we were getting our new house ready, still living in our old house. And kind of running back and forth and doing all that and just trying to, you know, do the holiday thing and work and all that fun stuff. And we got a call in December saying that a birth mother had picked us. And at first we had said no. And the reason we said no was because, Lucas was born in New Jersey. And in New Jersey, you know, the birth mother has 2 days to change her mind. Well, she had already signed off on her rights. She was willing to do all that. She had looked through profiles. She was very much wanting us to be the birth parents and or the adoptive parents. And but we found out from our social worker that the birth father was making a lot of talk and saying he was going to fight to get custody of the child and he wasn't willing to sign off on adoption papers and there was no way that was going to happen. So we said no. And I guess the birth mother was pretty upset because she really wanted us. And then they called again and they asked again, but still the birth father had up until like January 3rd to change it, like to fight for the baby, which, you know, I still don't understand why a birth father would get that much time, a birth mother wouldn't, but that was the law in New Jersey. So you know, the second time I was like, oh my God, like, no, this birth father won't sign off. And so it was kind of like, you know, well, she's going to take him home and try and parent because she just feels like he's supposed to go to you. If you're not willing to say yes, she's going to try and parent him. And we said, okay, you know, we're really sorry. Please explain the situation to her. Let her know that we had gone through a failed adoption before. We just can't do that. And now I also had Thomas to protect. You know, I had this other little being and, you know, it's already confusing enough for a little boy to understand like the adoption process. And all of a sudden we're going to pick up, you know, a brother or sister for you. And I couldn't put him through like, oh, this is your brother or this is your sister, and then have that taken from him. You know, I was not about to do that to my child. So, you know, we kind of thought that was that. And, you know, we had Christmas and, you know, we're just moving on and thought, you know, that was the way it was going to be. And we were back in the books and waiting. And then on New Year's Eve, we got a call again from our social worker saying, you know, that the birth mother is trying to parent. She just doesn't have the resources. The birth father now only had a couple more days and it was going to be a holiday weekend. And there was really no way at this point. And come to find out, it was just a lot of talk that he really hadn't done anything to try and get, you know, this child. And the birth mother had asked again, you know, could you please try and call that family? So for me, that was our sign. You know, I mean, three times this mother had picked us, wanted us, and it was like, okay, this is meant to be. Let's do it. Let's do it. He's supposed to be ours. So on New Year's Eve, we had to call my best friend, Steph, and ask her to come with us to pick up our new son and explain to Thomas that he was getting a brother. And we, on New Year's Eve, we had to cancel everything. We had to cancel Thomas's birthday because we knew we weren't going to be home because of the interstate compact stuff. And we got in the car and started driving to New Jersey with all of our stuff and going to an adoption agency in the middle of New Jersey on New Year's Eve. And it was, you know, kind of weird. Everything's kind of closed down. We're going to this agency, but it was really a beautiful experience. We got to meet his birth mother and his birth grandmother. And, you know, she handed off Lucas to us and he was so cute and he was so big. He was already like in size 2 diapers and he was born much bigger than Thomas. And, you know, we then after, you know, we signed all the paperwork, we brought Thomas in and introduced him to his new brother. And, you know, we ended up getting back to the hotel room at a little before the clock struck midnight on New Year's Eve. And, you know, popped open some champagne to welcome in our second child into our family. And, you know, again, it was magical and, you know, it was kind of crazy. Now we have, you know, a new baby and another baby and my husband and I and my friend. And so, you know, we couldn't go back home, but, you know, we worked it out. We went to the beach again and, you know, really had time to bond with Lucas and get Thomas used to being with his brother. And, you know, Lucas is also, you know, just meant to be our child. He's, you know, so much different than Thomas, but I think his temperament has challenged me in ways that I need to look at myself. I think Lucas and I have very similar temperament styles, so I can kind of get him. You know, there's never for a doubt in my mind that those two boys are meant to be my babies. And I, you know, after Lucas came, you know, we had talked about, you know, should we adopt again? You know, I always thought for some reason I was going to have a girl and we thought about adopting a little girl. But, you know, Lucas and Thomas, they're so close and they're best buds and we have a good thing going and we don't want to screw that up, right? Like we all know that can get screwed up. And Lucas was challenging. He had a lot of stuff go on in his first year of life that we had to deal with. And
You know, he's great in every sense of the word now, and we love him to pieces. But, you know, I just felt like, no, you know, this is our family, and I feel really good about that. It took a little while for me to get there and get rid of all my baby stuff. But, yeah, so I love these two boys, and that's my miracle. So every Thanksgiving, I sit back and I remember the Thanksgiving before getting matched with Thomas and how much I would go to friends or family's houses that had kids and think like, oh God, holidays suck. Like I'm never going to have a family. And now I do, you know, so I try to always remember when things get crazy or family's being nuts or turkey's not getting cooked right or I have a bazillion things to do. It's like, yeah, but guess what? I have two babies. And, you know, it doesn't always look like the Hallmark movie, but it doesn't matter. So think about for you today, what's a holiday miracle? You know, what are you grateful for? What are you thankful for? I know by you listening to this podcast that you care about being a mom. So think about back to before, you know, having your child and what it was like to have them in the world and be thankful for that today. You know, just put that love and energy out there. So I will talk to you next week, mamas. Take care. Thank you so much for listening, mamas. I really value your time. And if you like this episode, please share it with a friend and leave a review because they always help. If you want to learn more about me, just head on over to my website at drcynthiah.com. And you can find me on the socials at dr.cynthiahhoffer. Until next week, please keep on taking care of you because life really is too short not to be happy.